Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is part two of Hump Day with Swanee and friends Samantha Richards.
Fuck, you're struggling today.
Dane Swan. And guest friend, the D's and Pies tomorrow, Lyndon Dunn. Thank you very much for coming in, Lyndon.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Woohoo.
We could have got so many past greats. Peter Moore, Shane Woden, Jeremy Howe. But you, and now, a bit like Dane, but twice as much, you can do twice as many charity works gigs for Melbourne and Collingwood.
Busy man this week.
Yeah. Exactly. Absolutely. What are we doing before the game?
I've got a function on Bridge Road at the Sporting Globe with Alex Fasolo, and then
you got him covered. So
he's a good man to work with. I just play shadow.
Yeah,
it's always the Fazzy Boy.
He does.
Fazzy Boy show.
He likes talking about himself, doesn't he?
At what point in your careers do you start running around going, okay, now I've got to think about my media career? And when I say media, I mean charity career. Yeah.
Well, I don't know how Faz has got one, but. I don't know. I just, whenever you get asked, I guess you do it.
It's a touchy point for Dane, because early last year, Collingwood put out Past Greats Lunch and Faz was host and Dane didn't get an invite.
No.
So.
I'm sure Swanee was busy somewhere else.
Yeah. Probably, yeah.
Right, so D's and Pies, where's the obvious question to start with? Where's the loyalty at the moment?
Well, it's the question I get asked the most.
Yes.
Every time I go and watch the Pies, I wear my Pies scarf. And every time I go and watch the D's, I wear my D's scarf. But I go very neutral when they play. And I can't lose.
Well,
I can lose, but I can also win every time. So,
do you have kids?
Yeah, three boys.
What? Who are they going for? Are they too young yet?
No, they're all Pies.
All Pies.
Yeah. Except, so I'm playing footy at the Caulfield Bears and our song is the Carlton song.
Okay.
But trying to find the Caulfield Bears song on YouTube to listen to is not possible. So the boys... The boys are starting to sniff around the Blues as well, I'm not happy.
No.
I'll stamp that out pretty quick.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and what age are your boys?
12, 4 and 2.
Right. So, I saw you at the D's Coterie recently. We host the Life Members once a year and I had Flemo with me. So, you'd been doing some work at cricket, is that right?
Yeah, I was at Cricket Victoria doing Player Development Manager, which was great.
How'd you get into that?
I think I just had good relationships with my PDMs when I was playing and... everyone sort of thinks when you retire that you've got to go into coaching if you want to stay in footy or sport. But the administration side and the player welfare side sort of really tickled my fancy and I love my time there, yeah.
What does a PDM actually do?
It's all the welfare stuff off field or off the pitch. Yeah. So sort of where they live, the studies, extracurricular activities. It was great.
And what surprised you about cricket compared to the footy culture you'd obviously immersed yourself in?
Well, all the cricketers think that they would have gone top 10 in any draft for the AFL. Just the same as Swanee would know that all the boys that play footy could have worn a baggy green, no worries.
Absolutely.
Batting left-handed or right-handed. they love their footy. But it was just great to get into an environment where it's still sport, it's still highly team-based, but not footy. I loved it, yeah.
So I sent Dane a message when I saw you there, and so I wonder if you... be good for the show. What was your response, Dane? Can you remember that?
I can't remember.
I can't remember anything.
We got beat on Sunday, so it's been a big couple of days, so my head's a little blurry.
Right. Well, you did say, I like him, but I didn't like him when he tagged me.
Yeah, no, he did. He did tag me when you played at Melbourne a couple of times. He's big and strong, so I didn't like the people who were big and strong because that was sort of my strength. Yep.
It's absolutely hard to believe that I did chase Dane around because I was a lot heavier playing fullback than I was when I was running around on the ball. It was always tough chasing Swanee around, that's for sure. Yep.
What was your memory of it? Because obviously you managed to put an imprint on the man's brain.
Well, I just remember playing on, Swanee's strengths as a player where he's burst running, which clearly wasn't mine. And as Swanee said, he didn't like playing on bigger, stronger bodies because once he got wrapped up, he couldn't get away. And that was the aim of the game, was for me to wrap him up and for him to run away.
So it was quite frustrating, yeah. So I'm probably sure I said some mean things to him out in the MCG at some stage. Yeah.
And pre-show as well.
So, and when I texted him, I forgot. So it was a sliding doors though. Your first year was the first year you left,
So 17. Swanee finished and then I got there in 17, yep. Yeah.
So what was your first, I'll ask you obviously about the D's, but what was your first impressions of Collingwood and that different environment for you?
Yeah, I was at Melbourne for 12 years and I always wanted to be a one club player. But then I was spent most of the year in the VFL in 2016 and knew that I had to leave because I still had something to offer at AFL level. And I really wanted to go to a big club like Collingwood, Richmond, Carlton after...
Not a big club.
Not a big club, but, 15, 20,000 fans at the G, most of them in the MCC every week.
Some of them there at the end.
Yeah, I really wanted to experience what a big club was like to play for. And I was blessed to go to the Pies. And literally, they're across the oval, same car park. So it was a bit weird for the first couple of months, but just love the how close everyone is at the club. It feels like a big local footy club,
right?
Walking into the Holden Centre as it was then, every day, and just everything. The best thing about the Pies is everything's your own. You've got your own gym, your own pool. You walk out up the steps to the oval, whereas at the D's we were all over the shop at Amy Park, out at Casey, time trials at Princess Park, trained at Trinity Grammar back in the day, Junction Oval where you had the big three asbestos rats and possums running through the walls. So it was really nice to go to the Pies, and it just feels like a big country footy club.
How big a difference is it? Because Howie's come over, Tay Adams from Jerry West, going out and running out in your first game in front of 80,000. When you get drafted, Colin, you're used to it. So it's Mick, you say blockbuster fatigue. Cause we used to play in front of everyone all the time. And when we'll play in Melbourne, Mick would always just say, mate, the Queen's birthday, that's their grand final. This is what they get out for because they play in front of a big crowd. Is it a huge difference? Or once you walk in, footy clubs basically the same, or could you tell the difference going into a huge club where there's so much spotlight on you all the time?
That's the hardest thing about playing for the Pies is that every week someone wants to knock Collingwood off because it is like a grand final, in smaller terms. So every week, no matter where the Pies are on the ladder, the team wants to roll them. Yeah. But I think that brings the best out in Collingwood, and that's the way that they've embraced that now. And there's no doubt that the crowds across the country are so much bigger for the Pies. So I played a lot of games at Subi with a very, very average losing margin for a long time at Melbourne. And I won my first game at Subi, my first year with the Pies. And there was more Collingwood supporters there than Freo.
Yeah.
And I just remember every time we'd kick a goal, which didn't happen very often over there with the D's, you could hear a pin drop from the airport in Perth, I reckon. But there was actually more noise when we kicked goals against Freo that day at Subi, which was amazing. Yeah. You just go everywhere and there's Collingwood supporters.
And hundreds at the airport too. You get off the airport and there'd be 100 people there. You have to sign a million cards when you got off the airport. I don't even know how they knew what flight we're on, but... that was just the power of Collingwood.
I didn't know anything about that, mate. That
What about the stars at the club, particularly when you walked in? So obviously Ed was still in charge, and Nathan was the coach, and obviously by then Pendles was already a legend. What type of impression did they give you?
Eddie was great for my family, and I still remember I played my first game after Anzac Day in 2017, and my family was obviously there, and Eddie saw them in the race just before the final siren went. We beat Geelong that day, which was a big win for the club. And my old man was at the top of the race. Emmett came and ran out onto the ground, my older son, to meet me. And Eddie was just great at making it a big local footy club like I spoke about before. And he's a great man. And, he's had some times in his career that he's been questioned and sort of put his foot in it like a lot of people. But I love the man, and he's been great for me and my family. And Bucks was the same. Everyone's got an opinion on Bucks. Usually indifferent to most that have been involved with him closely. But I enjoyed both of them immensely. And Pendles, as a captain, is the greatest captain I played under. And I played under Nita and Brad Green and Jonesy at Melbourne, who are all great men and great leaders. But Pendles is just next level.
Why?
Just the way that he carries himself. He's certainly very different to the way that Dane is off the field. But he's happy to organise, you know, a good time for the boys, and then he sort of does a smoke bomb and slips out the back like Homer through the hedge. But he's always happy to organise things off the field, the way that he brings the boys together at training, and his performances. For me, a great leader just leads game day and plays their role exceptionally well, and he just
knows
does
everyone
that.
Else's role.
Absolutely, and he just makes it easy for everyone to do that.
I just wonder your impression with Nathan as a coach, and he was here. What was that, last November? Yeah. And just spoke about he got a bit of a hospital handball when he took over List when it was Dane's team, and everyone was flying, and it was mixed List, if you like. He's spoken since about in 2017. He changed himself and became a different person, different captain, coach rather. And you probably got the best of Nathan as a coach, and he'd learned his craft by then.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I had a lot of coaches in my career, more than most. I don't know if we've got long enough to go through them all. But so when I got to the club, you know, Bucks was a new coach for me. Was nothing new. Was nothing different. Yeah. But there was unrest in the change rooms about Bucks, and a lot of the boys weren't on his side or weren't seeing the vision that he had or the way that he coached, which I was sort of impartial to, and I was fresh set of eyes.
Yep.
And there's no doubt that year Bucks changed a lot about himself off the field, in the coach's box, at training, around the club, which clearly the results we saw in 2018 had a lot to do with that. So the change that he put into himself as a coach and a person, I 100% saw that. The group felt that, and the group needed that, because when I got there, things were a little bit tired and stale, I think, and had been done the same way for a long time. And the way that he changed himself for us made us better and almost got us that success in 2018. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, I wasn't obviously there in 17, but I was with him last night. But, yeah, I think he first walked in, I've said this a million times, first walked in and we expected everyone to be Nathan Buckley. And that to get the best out of themselves. And we all know there isn't many Nathan. Well, there's no Nathan Buckley's. And what he did to make himself, you know, arguably Collingwood's greatest ever player, was something that 98% of footballers can't do, because he was just so focused and so driven and so hardworking. But so he came in 12 and expected everyone to do what he did, and it just doesn't happen. And it obviously took him a while, like 4 or 5 years. But once the penny dropped, it obviously dropped quickly, and they transformed within 12 months, and we're fucking a minute and a half off winning a flag, which is, shattering that they were in front for 95% of the day and a minute and a half to go, and she kicks that goal, and that's the end of it. So, credit to him for realizing it took a while, but stop micromanaging people and starting to delegate and actually trusting the people who were at the footy club, because they're at the footy club to do their job. So, I was disappointed that I didn't get to see that, to be coached by that Nathan Buckley. I got the one where he was just so driven and so focused on everyone trying to be like him, trying to be like, you know, so military focused. But it is what it is, and you know, what can you do?
It seemed like he, as an outsider, but he's spoken about it, that he embraced mistakes and humour. Well, and in the second phase of his coaching,
absolutely.
Which is what you got when you walked
in. Yeah, there's no doubt that what Swanee just spoke about then, that he was such a good player and such a rare unit that players aren't like that. And he didn't live the life as a player of the small half forward, like a little Jared Blair or a Josh Thomas. You know, he won Brownlows and was always the centre of attention. He's Nathan Buckley, of course. So when he removed himself from that and expected all the boys to be like that, he was great to have a laugh with. The coaches that he had around him were great as well, I think. That was probably the forefront for us changing as a team.
How did it work for you? And then, of course, as Swanee said, it was such a heartbreaking grand final loss, but your heartbreak was before that in doing your knee. But how, before you did your knee, you felt like you were in the zone there, yeah?
Yeah, it was nice. I was, I didn't, when I came to Collingwood, there was a lot of questions outside about me being traded, whether I was going to get a game. I was bullish on what I was bringing and why I was coming to Collingwood. And as I mentioned before, I played my first game after the Anzac Day game. And then I played 31 games on the trot, was in the leadership group, and did my knee that year, which wasn't ideal. But still, there's no doubt the 2018 grand final was a highlight of my career. I'd never been to a grand final. I always wanted to play in my first. So to sit in the coach's box that day and see what the day was about, I'm a footy nuffy from way back. So, but I was always wanted to play in my first grand final and be there to play in one. So I still remember at three-quarter time, I was allowed on the ground because I was on the long-term injury list, and Bucks and I were in the huddle revving the boys up to go into the last quarter, and we got off the ground, we're going up the stairs behind to get up back up to the box, and the crowd went bananas, and Geordie kicked that goal in the first, and Bucks and I just looked at each other in the stairwell, and we're like, we're on it.
Yeah.
And it was like this moment that we had where we're like, we're actually going to a fair chance to win a flag here. And then, of course, as Swanee mentioned, everyone knows everything happened, but it was one of the great experiences of my footy career.
How was it in the box in the last 5 minutes? Was there like yelling and screaming like, fuck, what? Or was it just silence because you're stunned at what's happened? Or obviously, because I imagine there's not many moves you can make in like a minute and a half to go. Like, it's up in, that's why it's in the players' hands. But was there screaming? Was there ranting and raving? Was there, boys, what can we do? Is there a move? Or was it just silence?
No, it was very calm. So I remember after Geordie kicked that goal, Bucks and I sat down in the chairs, and then so you had Rob Harvey was doing the mids, Brenton Sanderson was doing the forwards, and Justin Longmuir was doing the backs, who I was working with, and there was conversations at about the six or seven minute mark saying, righto, if this happens, what do we do? Who can we move? If this happens, what are we going to do next? Trying to see the plays before they happened. And to be honest, it's a bit of a blur, but I remember that Woody ran through the mark as the runner or something. That was in the last quarter, and you know, Buck sort of obviously wasn't thrilled, but he didn't go off his tree or anything. Yeah. That was a big moment in the game. I think we went forward before McGovern took that mark, and then they switched it down the outer side in front of the warning stand, and then it kind of is what it is. Like, I think Bruzzy Maynard probably should have got a free kick before that. Yeah. And then, you know, Sheed takes that mark and is an unbelievable kick. And that vision from behind him is an unbelievable set shot. That's the difference in the end between a medal around your neck and not.
It is a fascinating sliding doors, isn't it? I mean, obviously a lot of West Coast boys probably got extra extensions to their contract. They're in the shitter. And
so basically that winning that fuck their side for
fuck 5 years.
Exactly. Yeah. I reckon most players would sign that contract.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you spent time in a coach's box during games?
Nah. I was basically always playing, and when I hurt myself, I went to Bali. Benny Johnson was in there when we played in 07. We played in the final and had a draw in overtime against West Coast in the semi-final, and he was in there, and I think me or Pennells kicked the goal in overtime. And he cheered. Mick turned around and goes, get the fuck out. No cheering in my box. So you weren't allowed to do much in Mick's box. But he cheered. He goes, get the fuck out. So he tried to get out because he cheered a goal. So, I wasn't a coach's box kind of guy.
What for our listeners who haven't been at the elite level, in a broader sense, what is it like in a coach's box in that situation?
Well, it was great because I was doing some coaching with the AFLW team.
Yep.
And then it's just a great way to see the game differently. And the coaches' box is like Swanee was sort of speaking about. Most senior coaches have got their little ways with how the box runs and what can be said and who talks and who sneezes and who farts when and where. Not ideal when that happens, but it's great to see when a box runs well and there's clear communication. You know, you've got a head. We had a headset, one of the line coaches would have a headset with, Nick Maxwell on the bench. One would have a headset with the head of S&C on the bench. There would be another phone ready to go so players can sort of come on and off and talk. I know Fly now likes to sit on the bench like a lot of coaches do. I get the personability with that, but it's hard to see the game from ground level. It depends what you value, I suppose. And you've got to have good trust in the people up in the box if you're going to coach from the bench.
Now, I've got a memory of you, I don't know if it was 2018 or maybe it was 20, when you were injured, but you run out in a clown suit at training. And Nathan laughed. So there's two unique things. What was the background of that?
Yeah, that was 2018. So that was my first run coming back from my knee. And it was prelim week. And the boys, yeah, they wanted to dress me up in. I went as, it was sort of just, I was like a party boy. But I did look like Redfield a little bit. And I did play a LMFAO song. And I just took the warm up just to get the boys up and about, really. It was good fun. And we played well that week, I think, too.
Absolutely. it's an underrated part of footy, isn't it? Actually just enjoying that time, because Dane always says he had 2 hours in him a week, and the rest of the time you don't want to be overly serious all week, do you?
Well, it's funny. I suppose for a player like Swanee, and I'm putting words in his mouth here, but the change sort of happened with being serious all the time with AFL footy, especially game day and on the field. I don't know, 2016, 17. If it had been that way from the start of your career, mate, I'm sure you would have enjoyed that a lot
absolutely,
more.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I think the moment was, for me, I remember when Richmond, they got Jack Higgins in the huddle at quarter time or three-quarter time to tell a joke or a story. Yeah. And, they're two goals down or something, game's on the line, and they're all just having a laugh in the middle of the MCG, and they go out and just tear shreds off the opposition in the last quarter. So I think when the enjoyment and smiling and having a laugh came out, it just brings the best out of most blokes, because most blokes don't like to be serious all the time.
Yeah, and if you're enjoying yourself, you're more productive. So if going to work, if you hate going to work, you're going to do the bare minimum. But if you enjoy going to work, you spend a bit more time there, you work a bit harder, you go, fuck, I'll hang around because I actually enjoy being here. But if you're going, like, oh, fuck, I'm going to get yelled at today, behind the goals footage sucks, so I'm not allowed to smile, I'm not allowed to, you just do in, you go, bare minimum, then you're out as soon as your last actual things done. Yep. If you enjoy it, be like, fuck, I like the boys, I'm going to hang around, I'll watch a video with this young kid, or fuck it, I'll do some handballing on the sprung floor, or I'll get in the ice bath and sit in the spa and tell some stories, because it's actually an enjoyable place to be. So it's actually not rocket science, but it just took the AFL, because it was such a serious business, a hell of a long time to recognise that.
Because I wonder, so was the Swans no dickhead policy, was it, and leading teams and all that? Maybe that all just completely suited that type of group, but then there are other groups that come along that suits them in different ways.
Yeah, I think there's certainly a place for leading teams in those type of sessions, but just not all the time.
Yeah.
And there certainly wasn't enough joking and laughing besides probably after your season had finished at Mad Monday and that week following. That was probably the most fun you had.
Absolutely.
But to see it now, not only in AFL, but all sports, both male and female, the jovial side, to bring the best out in people and their performance is great.
How was the AFLW coaching them? Did you enjoy? Did you see a huge improvement over a year or two?
Yeah, it's the thing that frustrates me about AFLW is, and coming from the supporters, is they judge it against AFL. It's just such a different game. Clearly, the stats and the way that it's viewed on TV is very different. But the way the women's game's going, they're incredible athletes and they're very skillful. I've got a younger sister who played footy. So I was fortunate to sort of see her grow as a person and a player, but I loved it. It was great for me while I was still playing AFL to sort of tip into my coaching. Happened over summer, so it freed me up during the year to do other things and focus on myself just playing. But I love my time in the AFLW.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Yeah.
And it's improving out of sight because now there's a generation of girls who grew up thinking they can play AFL.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, there's girls growing up that now not only have male heroes playing AFL, but they've got AFLW superstars as well to sort of follow.
All right, well, if you come on a podcast like this, we have to ask you everything. So, and I was reading it, and it was like it was 50 years ago, this incident for 3 years ago. Your recollection, please, of why you and Steel Steinbott got suspended? Because it was a different era, it'd be fair to say.
It's funny, I was actually just thinking about this two or three days ago, and I was thinking, geez, I haven't been suspended in a while. And the last time I actually missed a game was for catching an Uber. And it was for this incident. Interesting, yeah. So, middle of, when were we? 2020. And so, the boys, I was still coming back from my knee injury, and the boys played GWS or Hawthorn in Sydney. I think it was GWS. And Howie hurt his knee on the Friday.
Yep.
So, he was pretty miserable, as Howie gets. He's all in. He's either really happy or absolutely nowhere. So, I could go over to his house, per the rules of the AFL. I took six beers and drove. It's three for me, three for him. Pretty sure my maths is right there, Swanee.
I think so, yeah.
And so I reckon I left my house about 6 p.m. Going to have a few over, maybe dinner, drive home, all good. I get there and Howie and Steele are absolutely buckled. Sure, they won't mind me saying this.
Statute of limitations.
Yeah, over. Exactly.
Yeah, so they were... They'd had more than six each, I reckon. And they're like, oh, just put the beers in the fridge and tuck in, mate, tuck in. We'll be right. And so then Steele was adamant that Alicia, his wife, was going to pick us up and drive me home on the way, which, again, is fine.
Yeah.
And then it got to about midnight, and I'm like, oh, what time's Alicia coming, Steelo? He goes, oh, no, she's not coming. I'm like, okay, I know what that means. So I'll book the Uber, which I knew that we weren't supposed to do, but it was either drive the car home, which wasn't smart, or get the Uber.
Had you told your missus you're just going for three? How did that go down?
No, I'd already texted the Dales at home.
Said it's going to be okay. It's going to be a night.
Yeah, but I thought I was getting home about midnight, which is fine.
Yeah.
And then, got the Uber, and then on the way, I booked the Uber on the way home, so I'm sort of in Carnegie.
Yeah.
Steelo was... was in Camberwell.
Did you grab Steel? Is Steel still kicking? Or
no, Steel's with me. So we've got in the car to go home, and then he's out of nowhere. I'm going to Wellesley's, and I'm like, "You're not going to Wellesley's, mate." He goes, "Yeah, I'm going to go to Wellesley's." I'm like, "Well, I know what I'm not doing. I'm going home. You can go to Wellesley's."
Yeah,
and then the rest is history. So it's one of the only times I think that I went home early and was a good boy. And thank goodness, because at 7:45 the next morning when Alicia rang me and asked where Steelo was, and I said that I didn't know, and then Jeff Walsh rang me 5 minutes later asking where Steel was and what had happened. That was that.
So was your suspension less than Steel's?
So I got a week.
Right.
So this
for catching an Uber.
This happened on the Saturday night.
Yeah.
But then because there was no VFL.
Yes.
I still played on the MCG Friday night in a scratch match against Essendon.
Right.
So I couldn't be picked that week to play ones, but I still played a game of footy and still I got 4 weeks. It's one of the great stories.
Yeah.
And it's, I suppose it would have been one of those packages you could sell to members and supporters to have been in the room that night at Howie's. They would have really enjoyed that.
But that's what I meant. It radio was like it was 50 years ago. You get suspended for catching an Uber because of certain restrictions that were in place. You were partly in the bubble, you weren't in the bubble, other people were in the bubble. Just a different world, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I still remember the video, the Zoom call that I had with the AFL on the Monday morning. And he was like, geez, you're stiff, Dunny. usually you'd be given a medal or lauded for getting an Uber home and not drink driving, but I've got to give you a week, mate. I'm like, it is what it is.
And that's when Ed came out and said he was proud of Steel. God knows why. But that was an example of what Ed was like as president, wasn't it? Because it was just stuff. And I'll wear the heat for saying I'm proud of Steel because it took the heat off Steel.
Good places. You always look after your own. And,
yep.
You know, he made a mistake, but probably not the world's
biggest mistake. Worst, you wouldn't think so, no.
I'm sure there's been players that have done worse things.
You reckon?
I'd say so, yeah.
I could name a few as well.
Yeah.
Are you telling in a private conversation, but I'm sure you don't mind talking about it. So, but you were saying even like post-game, it's no surprise that the Pies embrace a legend of the club, but you're saying the Pies embrace you and your family now just because you played 33 games there and that's part of their DNA now.
Yeah, it's unreal. So you've got to play 100 games to be father-son, and I did that at Melbourne, but my boys back for Collingwood because they're younger and that's what they saw at the back end of my career. So with the father-son, father-daughter academy at the Pies, they treat all the kids like their father-son, father-daughter prospects until they're 15.
Yep.
So whether you can play for the club or not and be selected that way. So my boys, if they want to, can train at the club whenever they can with the rest of the academy until they're 15, and that's great.
That's awesome. How's it explained to you that just because you're there, that's it, we look after our own?
Yeah, you just... Once you play one game, or even if you've been on the list for 1 year, you're just another past player once you finish, and everyone gets together, and it doesn't matter if you had a career like Swanee or a career like, I don't know, someone who's starting it, like Bo McCreary, if he was to finish sometime soon.
Yeah.
Everyone's treated the same, and the best thing about when you finish is saying that you played for Collingwood and that you played for Melbourne and going back and reminiscing a little bit and just having a beer with everyone.
All right. Well, so your career at the D's, can I put this premise to you? I've put it to Jonesy and Max before. It won't sell as well, but the book on the worst times at Melbourne will be far more interesting than a book on where Melbourne's at now.
It's it's so funny. Like, when you're a young person, you know what you know and what you see, and what you don't see and what you don't know, you can't comment on. But it's looking back at how we were as a footy club. Not so much as a team, because I think every time I ran out for Melbourne, we genuinely thought we could win, which is another story and another thing in itself. But 100% every time I ran out for the D's, I thought we could beat the opposition we were playing. But what was going on at the top and behind the scenes was incredible. And then, you know, to see the boys finally break that drought in 2021 in the middle of a lockdown, sitting on my couch at home with my brother. It was unbelievable.
Ubers. Didn't catch any Ubers there.
No Ubers that day, mate. And I was retired then anyway, so it wouldn't have mattered.
But you did. So you saw the worst of it. But when you started, actually, the club was quite reasonable. You played under Neil Danu. What was that experience like, and what's your memories of that?
Yeah, well, Rowdy was probably...
He wasn't Will McCudley back then, was he?
Nah, definitely not. If he looked at you or grunted in the hallway when you saw him in the morning, it was a good day. He was a great coach, very hard, very fair, which is the way that I like to be coached. A couple of my teammates, who I won't name, were the whipping boys, it's always good to watch when you're not that person.
That's it.
But he was a great coach. And then, you know, I still remember the conversation we had in his office when he gave me my first game at Junction Oval there with the, like I said before, the rats and possums and the asbestos just raining down on you for the roof. It's such a long time ago. But the man, what he's done for football, for MND, for people with the illness across the country has been unbelievable. And you see the boys that I play with, the older boys, who have all jumped on. They're always on the bus. They're always driving, driving the fundraisers and the awareness with him. And they all just call him coach. And I'm not in that crew because I was so young, but it still makes me feel pretty special that I played with those people and that I know those people personally, because it's such a good thing.
You kind of forgotten he was a coach and a player just because of how big and enormous the movement, all the what he's done for MND. Like, you just forget that he actually was a coach and a player, because it's just how enormous he's been, you know, post his footy career, doing, you know, something which is probably way more important than fucking kicking a ball around or yelling at young men trying to kick a ball. So he's been phenomenal. And how he hasn't won Australian of the Year or Victorian of the Year has got me beat when fucking old mate, what's his name? We won it this year.
Brett Sutton.
Fucking beautiful. Well, there was a man who did win Time Person of the Year a long time ago.
What was that?
Yeah. We don't like to name.
For different reasons.
Exactly. So, we don't like to name names. We don't drop his name anywhere. But
so my heat chart with you was because of my time in Coterie. When you joined the club, the big thing was a Coterie Golf Weekend, and it was during the year. How's this for compared to 2023? I've spoken to Brock McLean about this on this pod. That once a year, the D's would play on a Friday night, And then the boys would come up, and with the coterie, we'd get blind drunk and play a game of golf. And everyone was all in. That was your first experience at the coterie, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. It's funny, coming into the tennis club today, the last time I was here was for a Calcutta of the coterie, right, which was a long time ago. And we weren't drinking that night. That was midweek during the just in the pre-season. But, yeah, the golf weekends were infamous at the D's with the coterie boys. I still remember that one night we would usually go to Sorrento or somewhere and end up at the Conti. And Brock, who you mentioned, he's the first man I think of every time. We played on the Friday night. He would run 17, 18 Ks in a game. Yeah. And then I remember one night he couldn't get a taxi home and he ran the 12 Ks home from Sorrento back out to the
Rosebud.
Back out to Rosebud and then played golf and probably had half an hour to an hour's sleep.
Jeez.
I don't know how he hit him that day, but or how many balls he was seeing. But
So Dean Bailey was your next full-time coach after Neil?
Yep.
What was your memories there?
Yeah.
Because there were sparks of real genuine talent in that team.
Yeah, I think when Bales got the job, that was when everything was happening above his head and yes. He wasn't able to coach or drive the club the way that he wanted to. If Bales had had the same reign that that Neildy had when he came, he could have been a premiership coach, and that's easy to say because we were a basket case, but he was the new age coach of teaching players and educating players around the game rather than having Danners, who was sort of old school, rah-rah, emotional, more emotionally driven, and you know, we'd have two-hour meetings like most sort of clubs in the mid-2000s. But if Bales had the same run that Neildy got when he got to our club, he would have been an unbelievable coach. And he was still good, but just more from the teaching sort of background.
So you played in that infamous game, did you, at Geelong?
I did, yeah. I kicked two of our seven that day. Yeah. if anyone ever asked me, did you play in that game, it's my response every time. I played role that day. It wasn't my fault.
Voting a BNF, kicking two of seven.
I couldn't believe looking this up that you kicked 97 goals. I reckon there were years when Melbourne didn't kick 97 goals a team.
Well, I never kicked 97 in a season.
No, I know, but even in your career. But so what, it from an outsider, it looked like there was just never a connection between coach and team with Mark Neild's group.
Yeah, it was strange because Neildy came in and had his way of the way that he wanted to do things, and he was at Collingwood with Swanee. From all reports, was a great line coach, had great relationships with the players. He wanted to bring Collingwood into Melbourne straight away, and we just didn't have the cattle on the park to do that. And you spoke about like the army camp sort of style before. We would run in pre-season, pre-training. And everyone would wonder why we were such shit kicks during the year. It's because we did all our running before training. All the charts would go straight onto the board post-training. Everyone would be comparing themselves. Who ran where? Yeah. Who did this? Who did that? And we couldn't play footy. And then round one, Neildy's first game as coach was my 100th game. And I did my hamstring in the last 5 minutes. So I sat in the coach's box for the first time in round two. And that's when we lost to Essendon by 147 points. So that was fun. I think.
A bit different to Bucks's.
Just a little bit, yeah. Yeah, that was. Yeah, that was something to see. I'm happy I didn't play in that one.
Watch your memories from the coach's box. Come on.
Oh, that night, not much. Like I remember from about the 10-minute mark of the first quarter, we were just absolutely nowhere. And Neildy, his head was spinning. Like, he wasn't used to that sort of thing. We were, of course. It was just another Saturday night for us. But I suppose when you look back at that game, I watched that game, but that game in Geelong that you spoke about, we still lost by another 40 points. Like Stevie J kicked 7 and had 35 that day on Cole Garland, which every time I see Garlo, it's the first thing I mention.
It's a good day.
It's a good day.
So I'll put to you. So you mentioned about Jack Higgins and you running out and giving the boys a laugh. Isn't it that when you need humour, you probably... But if you brought humour to a club going bad, like North Melbourne the last couple of years or whatever... The media would kill you.
Well, I think
that's probably what's needed.
Yeah, well, there's a time and place, but I think, you know, for any team that's struggling, whether it's game day or throughout the season, if you see someone smile, it's not a big deal. I think we've moved on from that.
Yes.
Because otherwise you just spiral out of control.
Even like when players get criticised for having a smile after the game, like shaking the hand of, like, you know, their mate who they might have played with or they've grown up with after a game, you get beat. And you're like, oh, mate, away, and you fucking have a laugh or reminiscing about whatever, and that gets magnified, and someone on footy classified on Monday night, we go, this is a horrible look. They've just been beaten in a final. They've been beaten by 70 points. Disgusting. Like, how can he be smiling? So, mate, well, we're fucking human. And like, everyone gets told you don't carry your losses and that with you. But once the game's over. It's just the game. Like,
yeah.
If I see me, mate, I'm going to say hello and go, fuck. Like, you know, talk about what happened in game or what are you doing tonight. If you have a smile, well, you know, so be it.
That's it. What changed as a supporter? I always thought the most important recruit Melbourne ever had was Peter Jackson. And his first interview, he said, I had to be talked into wearing a club tie. I don't want to be a supporter. I want to be I want to do a job and leave. And I like that, just as a supporter, because we had supporter CEOs. I don't want supporter CEOs. I wanted a businessman. And then he was able to get Roozy. And then from there, it went upwards off-field as a fan. But what was it like as a player?
It was nice to have some direction and some clarity in where we were moving as a footy club, because we'd been spinning our wheels for a long time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, to get Roozy come across was big.
You know, what first struck you with that about how he goes about it?
It's probably how basic the game actually is.
It's a simple game.
Roozy's biggest things as a coach was if you have 12 missed tackles in a game, you lose 95% of the time. Or if you fumble 10 ground balls.
How many missed tackles did you have, Dave?
Well, not many, because I didn't have many tackles. I was an elite non-missed tackler, just because I was elite zero tackler. Yeah. No, wasn't a strength of mine, the old tackling.
Sorry, it's hard to tackle when you got the ball, mate.
Yeah.
I did that lob. Sorry, go on about Roozy.
Yeah, so it's just how basic the game was and how important playing your role for the team is. And it's something I always valued as a player, was making sure that game day you do what you say you're going to do, so that your mates around you can do their job as well. And the best part about playing footy is singing the song. So everything for me always pointed to getting everything done so that you could sing the song after the game. But he was just very basic in his mythology, very, very, he's very calm. You know, he's Tammy, his wife, is, you know, into yoga and meditation and clairvoyant, which I sort of enjoy as well, that space. It's probably for another show, that one. But yeah, he was a big name in footy to come to our footy club, and, he was so different to how he's perceived in the media. He's very sure of himself, and Paul Roos is all about Paul Roos, but he's got time for everyone. I've still got a great relationship with him. I text him off, I would say, frequently. He's over in Hawaii and LA at the moment. Really enjoy my time with Roosie.
So fast forward to the end, when the D's, not the end, but when the D's win the premiership and you're on the couch, you must have thought, fuck, Max and Tommy Mac, they were with me when we were completely shit. You know? So that must have added something to the enjoyment of watching it.
Yeah, well, I played with a lot of the boys, like Neil Bullen, Brayshaw, Clary, Track, Brayshaw, Maxie, Harmsey, a lot of these players, Salem. It meant a lot to me as well, and to the Melbourne supporters. You know, the last, I was sick of saying it, but, you know, 64 was a long time since the last one.
Tell me about it.
And to see the boys get it done, like, for me, one of great memories was Clary kicking that for the fourth centre bounce goal in a row and just pointing up to the stands like this. And it was like, holy hell, the boys are going to do it. Like, it actually is possible. Like, it's not some foreign object that can just be spoken about. Like, the boys are actually going to win the flag.
Yeah. All right, so you're neutral tomorrow night. But in closing, what's life for you now, and what's footy life for you now?
Footy life. So I'm playing coaching at the Caulfield Bears.
Yep.
First year as senior coach.
So you said before, coaching, was that always things you went into player development management? When did you decide to shift from welfare to coaching?
Well, I'm still, I suppose, more of a job. I'm still interested in the welfare side of things, but I certainly love coaching, and I think I see the game very well. So it's good that you can be a senior coach at local level and still have another role.
You find it frustrating, or do you have to dumb yourself down a bit?
Absolutely. But it's absolutely...
Because you come from the AFL where people get things allowed and the ball moves the way it should, but especially in second division, like, and I've played in some pretty ordinary sides over the last couple of years, like, being a coach, you pull your area out because you're trying to give them, like, just simple things. Like, even just, like, if you're marking the left back pocket, please switch it, just look to the right. Just look, at least. but it'd be frustrating. So
yeah, I was certainly aware of the frustration. So it's nothing that I didn't see coming. But yeah, my messaging as a coach, I think, is the same from the day one of preseason when I met the boys to when we finished round 18 the other week. You know, I say the same thing every week, three times a week. like you're saying, it takes time for the penny to drop, and you've got to sow the seeds. So we had a bit of a frustrating year.
Yeah.
I played 50 blokes in my senior side this year, which is a lot.
Yeah. Did you play?
You wouldn't be that silly to play.
I did my knee again this year. So I did another one, which was good for my coaching because I could actually sit on the side and just watch the game and sort of tip.
Well, how early into the year?
Round four.
Did you kick the bag before then?
Well, I did it 10 minutes into the second, was kick four goals too. Here we go, we're on here. I've never kicked 10 in my career. So I was like licking my lips and then next minute, crack and pop. That is what it is. So I'll
be there again next year?
Yeah, I'll be there again next year and hoping to play again. A bit of water to go under the bridge.
Yeah.
I've been to Cricket Victoria recently as PDM. And then my wife, she's recently changed roles as well. So I've had a bit of time at home with the kids and helping her transition and trying to look to see what's next.
Well, ideally, what career would you like for yourself now?
In high performance sport. Yep. When I finished playing, I got into logistics, into a broking company, and I didn't really enjoy my time there. One of my biggest things is for people is. Everyone asks when you're playing footy, what are you going to do next? What are you going to do when you retire? But I never knew.
Yeah.
So it's about doing things that you don't enjoy and sort of moving on pretty quickly. But once I got back into the high performance room at Cricket Victoria, I knew that's where I wanted to be and what I wanted to do because you just miss that.
Well, good on you. Fantastic career, and we really appreciate you giving up your time to come in here.
Thanks mate. Really enjoyed it.
No worries.
Good stuff. Lynn and done.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.